You're listening to a Times Higher Education podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Times Higher Education Issue Review podcast for the edition covering the 4th to the 10th of February 2016. My name is John Elms and today I'm joined by Deputy News Editor John Morgan and reporters Jack Grove and Matthew Rice. From our pages this week, English universities' recruitment of EU students has risen since the removal of the student number controls, some by more than 40%. John Morgan has been crunching the numbers for us on that story, and he'll take it through in a little while. Following their first national ranking of universities at the end of last year, and with their higher education sector being streamlined, the region of Iraqi Kurdistan is looking to the UK for help in raising its profile. Matthew will give us some insight into their efforts. And after a long period of research and analysis, Jack is here to take us through the results of Times Higher Education's University Workplace Survey 2016. He will fill us all in on the key findings from our third annual survey. But John, you've been writing about the influx of, or increase, sorry, in recruitment of European Union students into universities.
That's right. So this is looking at 2015, which was the first year in which student number controls were scrapped, and prior to that policy coming in, there were suggestions that it would lead universities to step up their recruitment of EU students because there's a demographic decline in the population of UK 18-year-olds, and you know, if there's fierce competition at home, it's sometimes easier to head to the continent and make sure you're bringing the numbers in. And the idea was that might be a concern because EU students tend to repay less of their student loans because once you're living outside the UK, it's a lot harder to get the details on someone's income and automatically take there are payments from their salary. In fact, it's kind of impossible to do, to deduct it automatically from their wage. You're relying on people to let you know what they're earning. Mm-hmm. And so looking at the figures that came out from UCAS about acceptances at individual institutions, the predictions about an increase in EU student numbers have been proved to be accurate. And, you know, you've seen English institutions like University College Birmingham, EU acceptances up 72.7% compared with the previous year. It's a rise from 165 to 285 in terms of overall numbers, and they're followed by University of Northampton, University of East Anglia, then Newcastle University and University of Southampton, two Russell Group universities in the list of the biggest rises in terms of percentages. The overall numbers at each institution are still fairly small, but the percentage rises are big and they're part of an overall pattern across the sector. UCAS's end of cycle report showed that EU numbers in 2015-16 were up 11% on the previous year, which is the highest yearly increase in EU student numbers that's UCAS has seen since it began keeping records in 2006. So it's a definite pattern that EU student recruitment is increasing. And you know, speaking to Peter Lilly, a Eurosceptic Conservative MP, he was sort of banging the drum that EU students shouldn't be getting taxpayer backed UK student loans unless there was some kind of insistence from the UK government that their home governments are underwriting those loans somehow. So in the year of the EU referendum, it's an issue that could become a bigger one.
Yeah, sure. And in terms of the concerns that Peter Lilly raised, you looked at some student loan company data on EU borrowers. What are the issues that he is talking about specifically? I mean, I drew out a few from your story that there was some unknown data about some EU students. There is no data about what they're doing now in terms of repayments. Is that the concern he's talking about?
Essentially, once people have left the UK, I think the student loans company is initially at least relying on graduates to keep them informed about their level of salary and thus calculating their eligibility to repay. I think the SLC is putting more effort into trying to trace people and pursue them, but I seem to remember it came up at a parliamentary hearing a while back that the SLC's phone system wasn't able to automatically dial numbers overseas, which was a bit of a hindrance trying to get in touch with people.
Interesting to know which countries that these students are coming from, and also that the level, the academic level they're at, because could be there's a limited amount of good UK students with good A level, so it'd be interesting to know if they're better qualified or worse qualified than English students, and you know, are they going back to France or Germany where they might get a graduate job, pay similar levels, or are they going back to, you know, Romania, Bulgaria, places where it's very unlikely they're going to earn £21,000 a year or more significantly?
I think the HESA stats show that the main sending countries in the EU are the sort of top 10 was led by Germany, France, Italy, Spain, but I seem to remember that Romania certainly did come in somewhere near the bottom of the top 10.
Absolutely. Well, John's story is on the opening spread of our magazine, pages 6 and 7, if you'd like to check it out. Matthew, you've written a really interesting story about in relation to a region which I didn't know much about, Iraqi Kurdistan. What have you found out in this? What is your story telling us?
Well, this is the Minister for Higher Education of the Kurdistan Regional Government in Iraq, who I met last year and again met this year when he was in London. And they have essentially, you know, an independent higher educational system, and they have instituted a system of rankings of universities, quite an elaborate system. They claim that there's never been such a rankings in Iraq. There are systems in Turkey and Iran, but they're quite rare in the region, and they're clearly looking to become more international. I mean, some of the criteria are, as you might expect, to do with contributing to the local economy and local needs and so on, but they're pretty international. The focus is on pretty international citations and research and quality assurance and so on, so they clearly are trying to up their game and get out of the sort of local paradigm, as the minister's assistant advisor said to me. And so it's quite an interesting development. I mean, both this year and last year, the minister said to me very clearly that he was rather disappointed with British universities. British universities are quite happy to accept Kurdish students on scholarships and take their money, but they were rather hoping that the British universities would rather collaborate more. I mean, he was suggesting possibly even a branch campus, but certainly there are obviously opportunities for curriculum development, quality assurance and so on. And he was disappointed with what the Brits were doing then, and he's still disappointed and urges greater involvement.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, what you mentioned, that he mentioned the branch campus. Did he expand on that, or at what universities he might?
Well, I don't. It wasn't developed in detail, and I think that's probably a rather ambitious aim. But I think he, you know, thinks that, you know, more British academics could come out to help with curriculum and you know, various sort of partnerships, possibly joint degrees. I mean, there are all sorts of options, and they're fairly familiar in other countries. It's just he feels that the Brits have not been reaching out to them as much as he would like.
Absolutely. Well, hopefully your story will see some more exposure potentially for this region. Thank you, Matthew. Matthew's story is on page 18 if you'd like to read more about what he found out. And now Jack, you've written the bulk of the feature section this week with one piece.
It's our THE third university workplace survey, and it's revealed some interesting results. Take us through what you've learned in this monster study.
Well, it's quite a huge study. We opened the survey in August, and people had about 3 months to submit their information. We asked them a whole range of questions about life in university, and we had about almost 3,000 people taking part in it this year, and some really interesting comments about what life is really like on campus for people. As in previous years, there's a real sort of divide between academic and professional and support staff in the way that they perceive their universities. Academics tend to be a lot less satisfied, disgruntled about various things, whereas some of the sort of administrative support staff have a bit more optimistic about life working in universities. There's some quite interesting findings about workload. 68% of academics said they work too much, and that's twice as much as the figure for professional staff. And I think the comments that come out are really interesting. Someone was saying how, you know, they thought they'd found their dream job and they were loving it, but the workload has just become unmanageable. One person was working on Christmas Day, apparently, and people are saying that, you know, although people outside academia wouldn't believe it, that they have a really hard workload and unmanageable hours, this is actually the case for quite a lot of people. And this isn't just academics just moaning, because they're actually quite positive about lots of aspects of their work. They want to be academics, they like, you know, they take great satisfaction from teaching and research, but there's just certain things about their job that they don't really care for that much. But there are quite a few of the comments. I mean, there was something like 5,000 comments. I was trying to read as many of them as I could, but quite a lot of them were quite positive. People saying, you know, they just don't really get this idea that the university is out to get them, and you know that their employer is a bad employer. They say, you know, look at the private sector, and you know, universities perform really well in comparison to that. Mm. Some quite interesting news lines coming out this year. We asked people whether they thought academic standards have been somewhat eroded with the abolition of the student number controls, whether universities were taking on worse quality students, and it was about half of academics felt that their university had compromised on student quality in a push to increase or preserve student numbers, and someone was saying what happened at their university was nothing short of criminal in the amount in the quality of students they were taking, saying that they were turning out cheats and useless, incapable dolts with top marks. So, so this is having a real, I mean, we laugh about it, but people, you know, if academics are saying this sort of thing, and now about their own students, you know, that could have quite an impact when these students reach the labour market, and some universities might lose their reputation in terms of the quality of the graduates they're turning out. Academics also feel they're 44% of academics say that they're working more now that you've got £9,000 tuition fees. And another thing that came out was the sort of new managerialism that's coming into a lot of universities with the imposition of research funding targets. Someone at a Russell Group University saying that they were being set funding targets that were impossible to meet. Well, only about half of the academic staff would ever meet these targets. So people feeling like they're being sort of set up to fail. So there's some really interesting comments. I wish we could publish more, but there's quite a few in this week's magazine, and we'll do some more work on it in the future.
Absolutely. Well, as Jack says, there is quite a mountain of analysis and survey that he's picked through, and there's loads more. You can find his analysis over six spreads in our features section from pages 36 to 47, I believe, in the magazine. I might even go further. No, pages 36 to 47. It is quite a beast of a feature. Well done, Jack, for staying alive during this survey. Well, I'm afraid we've run out of time for this week's issue review. But of course, you can check out all the matters discussed in this podcast, in the magazine, and on our website, as well as all the rest of the content that we've not been able to cover in this edition. You can look through all the analysis and the features and the book reviews that we have in the physical magazine or on our website, timeshighereducation.com. We welcome input from you, of course, and if you'd like to comment on anything from this week's edition, you can find us on all manner of social media: Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, Google+, and as I have mentioned before, our website. Please do get in touch. We'd love to hear from you. Until then, I wish you goodbye.
You're listening to a Times Higher Education podcast.